The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we are lucky enough to have General Greg Tuhill, President, Sixterra Federal Group. Good to have you sitting there, General. How are you?
I'm great, John. How about you?
We were at an event a couple weeks back, and I kind of put the shoulder to Greg here, and he said, hey, come on down to the radio studio. He reluctantly said, oh, okay, he came down. So I have a one-hour show here and 5 hours of questions, but before I start asking you every single question in the world, many listeners know about your background, and just give us maybe 3 or 4 minutes the highlights of your career.
Well, thanks. I'm a proud kid from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Went to Penn State, joined the Air Force, and had a great career that spanned about 30 years, 23 jobs in nearly every continent out there. And as I was looking to transition from my Air Force career, I was recruited to go to the Department of Homeland Security, where I continued my public service. And then from there, I moved on to the White House as the Federal Chief Information Security Officer. And now I'm in the private sector and trying to continue my mission of better protecting America.
Wow, that's a real nice summary. I went to YouTube and typed in your name. All kinds of stuff. I mean, no lack of you being on YouTube. And I took down some quotes, some of the things you said at the conference last week, some of the things from YouTube. So it's just a whole wealth of information here. I guess let's start off in, let's talk about your company. So my listeners are federal IT professionals. Get to work at 9 o'clock in the morning. By 10 after 9, they're trying to climb out the basement window and leave because they're so frustrated. You have to move to the cloud, but you have to be secure. You have to do this, but you have to do that. No, by the way, you can't hire anyone, and we don't know who your CIO is. And so my listeners, I mean, they're really frustrated with the whole idea of cybersecurity. Any advice for them?
Well, you know, I tell a lot of folks, take a look at the cover of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, because on there, it says, don't panic. And I think when it comes to cybersecurity, you got to maintain an even strain. Cybersecurity is all about risk management, John. And as we take a look at how you manage risk, it's about people, process, and technology. And often we get target fixation on the technology, and we don't take a look at it as a holistic risk issue. So don't panic. Have a plan. Be prepared for that really bad day. Engineer in resiliency. Follow the cyber framework. And good things can and will happen.
It's like driving in here today. I'm sure you didn't flip out about some semi hitting you. What you did is you have a safe car, you have good tires, and you wear your seatbelt, and you drive defensively. I mean, chances are nothing's going to happen, but you have to have that approach, don't you?
Yeah, and you have to look out for the other guy, too. And I think when it comes to cybersecurity, you need to be aware of the environment around you. You have to know yourself, your capabilities, and make prudent decisions based upon your risk profile.
I spent 6 hours at an event talking about data centers yesterday, and I took all kinds of notes and all kinds of vocabulary words, and I was dazzled with the acronyms, and I walked at her and said to myself, DCIM, DCOI, EIEI, EIO. Well, there's so many initiatives out there. I could do a show a week just on new initiatives. And what about the stuff that's already there?
Well, John, you know, I thought I had a PhD in acronyms after serving in the Air Force for as long as I did. But then I moved into civilian government and found out that the military was just merely the minor leagues of acronyms compared to the federal government. Look, you know, I think acronyms actually are an impediment to communication, so I try to avoid them. But when it comes to data centers, yeah, there's a lot of acronyms out there. But data centers right now, for our cyber professionals listening, data centers are where the cloud really lives. And, my company has the 57 world-class data centers in 29 markets around the world. So, you know, we're part of that constellation of capabilities. But we also have a security stack that, regardless where your information is, we're going to better protect your information than anybody else. And it doesn't matter if it's in the cloud, then it could be in Azure, Microsoft, Rackspace, Box, you name them, or it could be on-prem. Frankly, as I think as you take a look at the environment today, you know, the perimeter really is the person, because we have so much mobility. We have so many different devices. And we've got to change our model from, you know, 1970 ideas complemented by 1990s technology to a more secure and modern infrastructure.
It is so, you know, I think I brought this up at this event. You know, you pick up the Washington Post, there's an article about IoT, Internet of Toys. All of a sudden, new threat vector for personal security. It's what's going to be the threat vector next week for the federal government? It's like everyone's going out to get you, and it's multiplying.
Well, I think, you know, as you take a look at the different devices that are out there, let's get back down to basics. What are we trying to accomplish here? We're trying to maintain the confidentiality of our information so that only those who have a need to know and access that information have that access. We want to maintain the integrity of the information so that we can always trust it. And then we always want it to be available when we need it. That's really what we're trying to accomplish here. And regardless of what the platform is, you've got to be agnostic on the technology per se. You got to focus on what you're trying to achieve. And I think confidentiality, integrity, and availability is at the heart of everything we're trying to do.
I got up early this morning and did some research on your company, and I noted the number of data, 57 data centers. I wrote that down. I said, whew, that's kind of big. On Tuesday, I was speaking with a guy from Winter Park, Florida. He's a startup, a cybersecurity startup. And he said, yeah, in Winter, we have two data centers. Loudoun County is 140. And so I guess I'm desensitized to that. But 57, I mean, that's an incredible amount of information to manage 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, varying levels of security. This is like the headache central.
Well, I don't think it's a headache. I think it's a great opportunity. And frankly, we're the second largest data center company in the world right now.
You'd lose that in jeopardy, wouldn't you? Maybe you wouldn't, but I would.
Well, the thing about it is you take a look, you know, as I said earlier, you know, data centers are where the cloud lives. And my company recognizes that it's more than just hosting a box of computers in a data center that has world-class power, connectivity, physical security, and the like. You got to make sure that you have the logical security as well. And that's really what differentiates us is on top of the world-class data center itself, we have world-class security capabilities that regardless of where your information is going to better protect you.
I want to punch through your company here. It's kind of difficult to say on the radio. It's CYXTERA, and that is like the number six Terra, CYXTERA.com. And a pretty snappy website, just been redesigned or something. It looks very 2017-y.
Well, yeah, frankly, it's reflective of the secure modern infrastructure that we provide. And, you know, I tell my mom when she says, well, where did you get that six Terra from? I said, just think of it as CY for cyber, X for transforming, and then Terra is a nod to the world, the global presence that we have. Because cyber really is transforming the world. And as we take a look at our national institutions, our national economy, our societal institutions, you can't have the security in each one of those things without a secure modern infrastructure.
On your website, you talk about data center colocation, enterprise application, cloud computing, hybrid cloud, cybersecurity, analytics, and your Twitter feed talks about threat analytics as well. So there's a whole lot going on there.
Yeah, and it's, you take a look at that punch list. The colocation addresses, you know, where are you going to put your cloud? Where are you going to put your information physically? And the connectivity and the power and all those things that help support the cloud. Our software-defined perimeter technology is revolutionary and really addresses some fundamental flaws in TCP/IP, which connects and then authenticates. You know, that gets you inside the network. With software-defined perimeter, we authenticate before we even grant you access to the network. And once you're in, we make sure that multi-factor authentication, role-based access controls, and the like are applied so that we cloak the entire network except for those things that you have access to. Network analytics, micro-segmentation, fraud protection. Our company takes a look at the entire security stack of things you want from physical security all the way up through logical.
Take a little break here, come back. When we come back, I'm going to talk about a couple of things. I'm going to talk about Two Hills Law, and I want to talk about harden the workforce. And not only harden, but how. I mean, how to harden that workforce. Huh? And in the military situation, you know how to harden your people, but in an IT situation, how do you harden that workforce? Kind of two topics after the break. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, General Greg Tuhill, President, Sixterra Federal Group. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have General Greg Tuhill, President, Sixterra Federal Group. We've been talking about his illustrious career and data centers and threat analytics. And I want to talk about Tuhill's Law. It really applies to me because we have three grown kids, no grandkids on the horizon. We're thinking about getting a dog. And dogs are usually defined in dog years. Well, that's one human. That's seven dogs. Or 7 years is 1 year. I don't know what that means. It means something. You have something similar, but applying to cybersecurity, doesn't it? Well, so what's your rule? What's your law?
Yeah, well, thanks very much. You know, as I was taking a look at the landscape, you know, I was very familiar, as many of our listeners are, with Moore's Law, which addressed the amount of capabilities on a chip would double every, 18 months. And as I was taking a look at our aging infrastructure when it comes to the computers, the network devices, switches, et cetera, we have the same type of issue. A lot of our equipment is aging out. And I came up with the concept of Tuhill's Law to describe that. And I basically said, all right, well, the average human in the United States is going to live to be, according to the Health and Human Services Department, about 78.7 years. I rounded to 75 because it makes the math easier. And I took a look at Microsoft and other great American companies like it will put out a generational product every 3 years or so. So I divide 75 by 3, and I get 25. And the old adage, as you've mentioned, of one human year equals seven dog years, I contend that one human year equals 25 computer years.
So that three-year-old server is 75 years old.
Right. Well, and the thing about it is in both public and private sector, folks don't necessarily look at these hard assets with a depreciation and recapitalization plan. And in the federal government in particular, it's a problem where we don't plan for this great equipment and software that we have to age out. And we need to make sure that we are using best practices from the private sector for depreciation and recapitalization of our hardware and our software so that we can stay current in a very active cyber threat environment. You know, frankly, John, when I was doing the high value assessment study of the federal government and its assets, we found some computers that were commissioned as far back as 1964 and were still online. You know, if you do the math, that's hundreds, if not thousands, of years of computer capability there.
And it's like an abacus.
Yeah. And, you know, frankly, there's some folks that say, well, security by obscurity is a technique. But frankly, if you listen to ISC Squared and ISACA, they'll say it's an unacceptable technique. We've got to do better. And from our business process, we need to plan for success and continuously innovate and invest wisely.
I try to learn about hardware all the time. I went to an event this week that's focused on data centers. And there was a guy there from Schneider Electric. I reached out and grabbed him. His name is Dominic Alcaro. Nice lilty Italian name. And he got up there and he talked, and he said, approximately 3% of world's energy goes to data centers. I said, whoa, what? No way. 3%. I mean, let's think about that all over the world. And so what about energy management for your company? Is that an important factor? Is that just a long checklist item?
Well, frankly, you know, having run a lot of data centers in the military, I'm surprised it's only 3%.
It's going to be higher.
And,
wow.
You know, particularly with the cloud and the like. However, our data centers and most data center companies out there are very sensitive about power because it's really the circulatory system of a lot of what we do. It fuels us, and we want to make sure that we have reliable three-phase power in every one of our locations, that we have backup power. And with our facilities, we make sure that not only do we have great service providers coming in from like Dominion Electric here in the Virginia area, all the way down to making sure that we have backup generation that's organic to us. So if the power goes out from commercial sources, we have automatic battery backup that switches over to the diesel generators. And the fuel supply that's going to keep us running for however long our customers need us to have them stay up.
Let me ask you the big picture, 40,000 feet question here. Well, here we are in Northern Virginia, 140 data centers in Loudoun County, blah, 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 everyone knows that. Why here? Why not Ohio? I mean, why not Vermont?
Well, you know, if you take a look at the telecommunications infrastructure, the military had a big mission of commanding and controlling its forces. And, of course, the headquarters for the National Command Authority is here in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah.
So as the telecommunications network to support the nuclear command and control of the American military, as well as its other conventional fielded forces, it makes a whole lot of sense to me that this would be one of the best areas for communications in the entire world. And frankly, as the data center business grew up, it recognized that the telecommunications industry was robust here. This is one of the best areas in the entire world for telecommunications. But that said, you want to have geographic diversity so that if, in fact, something happened in this area, you can take a punch and keep on going, and your business can have that continuity. And that's why my company and others make sure that we offer geographic diversity so that we have data centers and markets all around the world in case one area does have a catastrophic event like a hurricane, a natural disaster, or some other problem, that you can keep on going.
I got a strange mixture of military and data center for you right here. So at the event yesterday, I'm taking my notes, and Dominic was up there talking, and he's talking about changing data centers and moving things around. And he said, data centers are like aircraft carriers. They don't turn on a dime. And so improving heating and cooling, or even changing out servers, really, really difficult proposition for many data centers. Is that right?
Well, you know, frankly, maintaining a data center is getting easier and easier from the standpoint of we've got professionals that do this and do it extremely well. If you take a look, though, if you want to move from one data center to a different one for geographic diversity or some other reason, yeah, you've got to plan ahead. And you've got to make sure that you have the right engineering background to implement those type of things. But I wouldn't necessarily agree that it's like moving an aircraft carrier. We can be extremely nimble and agile. And now with modern technology, you literally can move your data from one box to another at the speed of light.
I went to YouTube, typed in your name, and I saw an address you gave to the ICIT earlier this year. It's called Securing the Cyber Frontlines. And this is a great talk. If you're listening to this, if you even have a smartphone, I think you should go and listen to this talk, because Greg goes through, bum, 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 four main points. One of the points was harden the workforce. He talks about harden and training the workforce. Really nice to write down a piece of paper. Let's harden the workforce, train them up. But really hard to do in person, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm sincere when I say one of the first things you got to do is you got to harden up your workforce. Because if you take a look at all the incidents that are out there, you can trace them all back to human failure. And as I was the director of the NCIC, which is the acronym for the National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center, you know, we would dispatch our teams from the U.S. CERT, the Industrial Control System CERT, out to do incident response. And well over 95% were the result of a human failure.
Let's say that number again. 95 humans.
Over percent. 95%, yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, there'd be some of my colleagues who would say, that's probably closer to 100%.
Whoa!
But if you take a look at it, cybersecurity, as I mentioned before, is people, process, and technology. A lot of folks get target fixation on the technology. You have to invest in the people first, I think, to make sure that you have the right people, well-trained, who understand the risk, who understand the value of your information, can implement those processes well, and know how to leverage and use that technology to the best effect.
Yeah, the reason I ask is my next guest, we're going to talk about training and how to train humans. Now, training a 55-year-old human versus training a 25-year-old human, what is going to be best practice for that? And I'm involved in education, but I want the best way results for whatever person happens to be. And I think this day of training is really something. You got to go back to the old schoolroom and go back to the beginning and say, well, how do you communicate an idea to another human being, and how do you do it effectively? It's changed.
Well, and I used to be the 81st Training Wing Commander at Keesler Air Force Base, you know, training the Air Force's cyber personnel. And we recognize that not everybody learns the same way. So you have to have a strategy that takes advantage of a couple things. First of all, you have to recognize that you have to have many different delivery models. Two is you have to continually train. Three, you've got to continually exercise and practice that training so that you can continually get better. People do get rusty. People do forget things. So exercises and drills need to be part of your battle rhythm and your cadence that you're going to have for all of your workforce in its training.
That's very insightful. Let's take a break, come back. We'll talk more about data centers and training and cybersecurity and the future of the whole federal information technology workforce here. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest today is General Greg Tuhill, President, Sixterra Federal Group. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest today is General Greg Tuhill, T-O-U-H-I-L-L. You Google that, you get all kinds of results. I think most of the audience knows about your background, many different high-level positions. Now you're working with a company called Sixterra, C-Y-X-T-E-R-A. And you can go to their website at C-Y-X-T-E-R-A.com. I was there this morning. And I went to your Twitter feed, hashtag SDP, Software Defined Perimeter. Is that like a software defined network? Is that a subset of that? Or where does this all fit in the hagiography here?
Well, you know, frankly, Software Defined Perimeter is a technology that was envisioned actually by DARPA back in the 90s. And our company took that vision and made it a reality. And our company, Sixterra, was actually formed in May.
This from 2017.
Bang. But it's a result of five mergers and acquisitions. And we bought a company called Cryptzone, which took that DARPA-inspired research and made it a reality to better protect information with a different kind of construct. So rather than, as I previously mentioned, using the standard TCP/IP model where you connect into the network and then you're authenticated within the network, software-defined perimeter uses software that gives you intelligent solutions, and we authenticate before we even connect. We don't even bring in that network. And then further, we use that software-defined perimeter and a zero-trust model to make sure that you only see and are granted access to what you are authorized for. So as we do that upfront authentication before we even connect you, we're doing multi-factor authentication that is extremely rich and robust. We do role-based access control that you define as far as what assets you want to share and when. And then once we connect you, we use that software-defined perimeter to serve up only what you have access to. It's kind of like, John, if you came to visit a hotel and we gave you a hotel 202, hotel room 202. When you go into the hotel, we're going to check you out big time to make sure that you aren't carrying any viruses, any ransomware and the like. We're going to do the sweep under the car with the mirror. We're going to have the bomb dogs come through. We're going to give all that multi-factor authentication, the role-based access. And once we give you the key, you go into the elevator. You don't know how big that hotel is because when you hop in the elevator,
you only go on the second
there's
floor.
Only one button. Two. And when you step off that elevator, you don't know how many rooms are on that floor. You only see your room. And that defeats folks that follow the standard hacker model of getting into the network, port scanning it, moving laterally, trying to gain privileged access. We defeat that with software-defined perimeter.
10 years ago, I used to give talks on how to prevent spam. And one solution 10 years ago was something called a whitelist. Okay, mm-hmm. Only accept from these three people or these 10 people. This almost seems like it's a white. Okay, here's the places you can go, Greg. You can go to the grocery store, you can go to the pharmacy, and that's it. It's almost like a whitelist, huh?
Well, it's more than that, John. But, you know, let me get to whitelist. First of all, you do want a whitelist. And I would recommend to our listeners that you do what's called application directory whitelisting so that you put all your executables. Put all your executables that are on your whitelist, you put them in a single directory. And then you can have tighter control. You segment down to that micro level, and then you lock it down tight. Why would you want to have an executable that you haven't authorized onto your network? But as you take a look at our construct with software-defined perimeter, why would you want somebody roaming around your network, doing port scans, trying to move laterally? You don't. So let's get out of the 1990s type of architectural approach, and let's go to a more secure, modern, intelligent approach. That's what we've doing. That's what we're doing with the software-defined perimeter. And software-defined network capabilities are great, but that's confined to your own network. We look at your information's everywhere, and the perimeter is really the person. So SDP tackles that problem by securing you regardless where you are.
At the event I was at, there were so many terms tossed around, but one theme was the term consolidation. And anyone who's been in the federal government knows about consolidating networks and consolidating data centers. And what I learned yesterday is that consolidation is a great goal. It may not make you more effective or more efficient, but consolidation can give you mixed results. And so I always thought consolidation was wonderful. It's the end of the rainbow. Well, guess what? It may not be the panacea everyone's looking at.
Well, and you know, we take a look at it from a standpoint of looking at our federal customers. Consolidation of data centers is frankly a fact of life that we need to accomplish. We've got aging data centers, and on my last data call when I was serving in the federal government, our departments and agencies identified over 16,000 different data centers that the federal government was hosting, and most of them were aging and increasingly expensive to maintain. You mentioned earlier, you know, we've got the commercial sector has leapfrogged the federal government in capabilities with data center. This is what we specialize in. This is what we do well. Frankly, as I look at things, you know, Tony Scott came in as the CIO and echoed his predecessors in saying, hey, we need to start closing down a lot of these aging federal data centers. And I think, frankly, the new team that's in place needs to continue on with that. Because aging infrastructure continues to cost us, the taxpayers, money.
Let's switch topics to sports cars. When I was a young man, everyone wanted a TR6 because that was a fun car. And some people had MGBs, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that was the name. But I'm going to talk about MGT. MGT, Modernizing Government Technology Act. And this is got, guess what? It's got data centers right in the crosshairs, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, frankly, I like the TR7s and the MGBs as well.
I like the TR6 because it never starts. That's why I like the TR6.
But I also like the way we're going with this Modernization of Government Technology Act. You know, Tony Scott, the former federal chief information officer, he recognized, along with our entire team, that we couldn't continue to go down the path without, you know, recapitalizing our aging infrastructure. And a lot of our cyber problems were aggravated by the fact that we had antique equipment, we had aging software, and frankly, we had folks that were working, you know, our people that had aging and atrophying skill sets. So we needed to recapitalize across the board. And when it came to the hardware and software, we really didn't have a unifying modernization plan. So Tony had proposed a working capital fund that would help kickstart the recapitalization
of
our
aging. A new, fresh approach, isn't it? It's an outside-the-box approach.
And it's something that the private sector has already proven works. So as we go to recapitalize our aging hardware and software, as we look to innovate, we need to have a mechanism to do so. And MGT is a good start, and we need to move forward.
You know, if you're the CEO of Joe's Donuts, and the board says, listen, you reduce costs by 10%. We're going to give you a little bonus here. You have a nice Christmas for you. And so a federal government person wants to reduce costs of a data center, and they may get in trouble for that. I mean, not necessarily, but how can you motivate them to do? And this is a very creative way to motivate people to save money, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, if you go and you say, all right, Department XYZ, you go out there and you modernize, you use these innovative approaches, we need to reward them by investing the cost savings into their other high priority needs. And I think that's a type of program, a type of approach that is going to kickstart and fuel further innovative activities.
And there is a lot of innovation out there. And if you look at most data centers, most commercial data centers, you think that it's called enterprise IT. That's certainly changing, but the infrastructure is just dazzling. You know, I was at an event 3 days ago, and I was talking to an EE, an aircraft engineer, and we talked about carbon nanotubes in aircraft. It's like, yeah. He researched it. He said, wow, I said, yes, there's so much new stuff out there. So many more efficient ways to operate a data center that no one even thought of 5 years ago.
Well, and, you know, frankly, as I've come from the public sector and into the private sector, I'm amazed by how much less paperwork there is. It's much more agile, much more conducive to innovation, experimentation, and the new types of successes are generally coming from the private sector. We're no longer looking to the federal government as the source of innovation. And frankly, I'm one of those guys who believes that our paperwork in the federal government is holding us back.
We just have about a minute before the break here, but I want to talk about training. Earlier, you talked about continuous training, and of course, CDM is one of the terms that keeps bouncing back on systems, continuous monitoring. So CDM is a key part of managing a data center, isn't it?
Yeah, I think as you take a look at CDM, which you know from the Department of Homeland Security, we call continuous diagnostics and mitigation, you've got to have constant surveillance. You've got to be constantly improving. You've got to keep an eye on the ball. And for my time in the military, I recognize the fact that you're on watch 24/7. You have to have the ability to answer from a cyber perspective, what's on my network, who's on my network, and what's going on in my network.
I want to take a little break here and come back. I want to talk about the funny combination of words called cyber hygiene and what it means. And is it enough? And is there and how does that impact this concept of risk and risk management and risk management applied to assets? And there's some assets that are very valuable for the people who listen to this radio station. Let's take a break. Come back. We'll talk more with Greg. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest today, Greg Tuhill, President, Sixtera Federal Group. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have General Greg Tuhill, President, Sixtera Federal Group. And that's kind of a funny radio word. It's CYXTERA.com. I went there this morning. But really, if you want to find out more what Greg has to say about all kinds of topics, I would just go to YouTube, type in T-O-U-H-I-L-L. It's an unusual name. And you get all kinds of videos. I saw a video from February from ICIT. And it really, he boils down four simple concepts where you could sit on a train and watch the video and walk away and have a pretty good idea of some best practices for cybersecurity. So it's a... He's got an ability to take in, I don't know, what the chefs do, reduce the sauce or something, so you can reduce complex topics to make them very easy. I think it's YouTube friendly too. On the video, you talked about cyber hygiene. You get up in the morning, brush your teeth, eat vegetables, you know that, but it's got to be more than that.
Yeah, and you know, frankly, we need to be doing some more cyber flossing. You know, most folks,
toothpaste ain't good enough. Get one of those Oral-B.
Isn't good enough. You got to get out there and you got to floss as well. You know, when we talk about cyber hygiene, John, it's not complex. I think complexity is the bane of security. We got to keep it simple and we need to keep the right focus. And there's some things that are very cut and dry that we want to do from a best practice standpoint. And it goes beyond just keeping your systems patched. Of course, you want to do that. You want to stay current. You want to make sure that your operating systems, your hardware platforms, but your people are also current, that they understand the current state of the threat environment, that they are, in fact, doing those cyber hygiene things like making sure that their password is properly updated and you have the right cadence to make sure that somebody hasn't had sufficient opportunity and time to go and compromise that password. You want to follow some of those best practices that are well advertised out there, and I would encourage folks to take a look at us-cert.gov as a repository of some best practices.
CERT.
CERT. I would recommend folks also take a look at the SANS Institute and sans.org.
Just up the road, Alan Paylor, we know those folks.
Right, and you know, there's plenty of great things about best practices in cyber hygiene, and you mentioned that I've got a couple of videos that are mentioned on YouTube. But as we take a look at how to best protect networks and information, there's a lot that technical folks need to do as well. And it's patching. It's making sure that you are segmenting your networks and that you are controlling your privileged access, that you have folks guarding the back door, as it were, from the standpoint of everybody's got third-party contractors and making sure that you have the right cybersecurity mechanisms to make sure that your third-party contractors are implementing your security needs properly. There's a whole bunch of them. I put them out online, and you can reach out to me through Sixtera, and I can help you out further if anybody has any questions.
Sixtera. If you pick up Federal Computer Week, there was a story, and it was a headline. I thought it would impact your comments today. And the headline was, Air Force takes cyber message beyond the uniform. It talks about members' families and training and phishing and says, look, they may be going after someone in the Air Force, but they may actually go after someone's wife or someone's spouse or someone's cousin or mom and fool them. So it's not just 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, your job.
Yeah. And when I was still on active duty, one of the things that we recognized was social media presence is a great enabler, but it also is a rich source of information about what we call the blue forces. And that's our own forces. So if I'm a bad guy, one of the things I'm going to do, if I were going to attack John Gilroy, I'd go online. I would go out and find everything I can to know about John Gilroy. I want to know who you associate with. What social media platforms are you on? Where are you traveling? And then, you know what? I can take that information. And even if you yourself are hardened and you've got the best network capabilities, as well as the training, the processes, and the like, I'm going to try to find your soft underbelly. And often, that's with the people you associate
sure
with.
Is.
It's your third-party vendors and the like. And now we are finding, and certainly with the OPM breach, we saw this, where adversary set went and said, you know what? This area here is hardened up to an area where I don't want to spend a whole lot of money to go and try to puncture this directly. I'm going to spend a lesser amount to go in with a trusted third-party vendor who doesn't necessarily have the same hardening, and then tunnel in through there.
Well, it's like a bad guy trying to break through the house, you know? The windows are locked, the front door's locked, this is locked, the garage is locked. Maybe there's a way to sneak in through somewhere. I don't know, the second floor window's not open or something. I mean, they're gonna be just as tough as you can imagine.
Right, and you know, frankly, with the way current technology is and the current state of societal institutions, business institutions, and the like, we open up so many different trust relationships with different folks, both from a technology standpoint as well as an information sharing standpoint. That's one of the reasons why my company has adopted a zero trust model, so that your information is protected regardless where you are, what type of platform you're on, and the like. You want to make sure that your back door is guarded, and that's where that software perimeter technology that we have, the software-defined perimeter, is very helpful in a zero-trust environment.
We don't trust anything around here in Federal News Radio. That's where we have a crystal ball, so we'll find out what's going on in the future. So give us the future of cybersecurity here in the next 5 years. Tell me exactly where you think it's going to – is it going to be lockdown city? Is it going to be trust no one, or where is it evolving?
Well, you know, as we take a look at where we've been, we've seen attacks on confidentiality where crooks are stealing information and they're leveraging that information for their gain. And that could be financial gain, it could be intellectual property theft, it could be political military gain. We've seen folks do DDoSes or distributed denial of service, which negatively affects availability. And that could be, sometimes it's even self-inflicted by not having a really good infrastructure in place that can be resilient. But integrity of data has not necessarily been attacked yet. And that's where I see the next major catastrophe coming. You know, we've had a lot of talk about ransomware where folks come in and they're going to lock down your information and you got to pay them, you know, a couple thousand bitcoins to unlock it. What would happen, though, if somebody got in and started tampering with your information and they were persistent? They waited for a while to make sure that all of your backups were tainted as well. Then they come to you, John, and they say, you know what? You're a major institution. You're a major business. We have monkeyed with your data. And instead of, 1,000 Bitcoin, now it's going to be 1 billion Bitcoin.
And we got all your backups, too.
And we got all your backups, too. I fear that if we don't adopt that zero trust model, if we don't adopt things like the software-defined perimeter, we are opening ourselves up to attacks on the integrity of data.
There are many people that you have the, here's a fancy word, a facile assumption that backup is the answer for everything. Well, if you back up, you don't have to worry. Well, guess what? The code could be buried in there too.
That's right. And backup is, you know, making sure that you have backups is in fact an essential element of every good cybersecurity program. But first things first is you got to keep the bad guys out to begin with. And you got to make sure that you have the analytic platform. You need to make sure that you have the ability to detect when you're deviating from your expected norms.
Do you think, you know, I've had years ago, people would leave notebook computers in taxis and stuff would get out. And that hasn't happened since. I see the government reacting well to many situations. So where do you think it's a commercial company is going to be attacked? Or is it going to be a federal company or organization going to be attacked? Who's next?
I think the landscape's everywhere, frankly. You know, it's like if you take a look at where your information is, if you pick up your phone, which is now an application-driven world. Because how many apps do you have on your phone, John? Most folks have dozens of applications, and your information's out in the cloud. It is not necessarily on the single device anymore. And if people think that the endpoint is really, you know, your phone or your laptop and the like, I don't think that that model holds anymore. The endpoint is really the person. The information is everywhere. We've got to make sure that you have the security model in place that is going to secure that information regardless of where you are. And, oh, by the way, people still are leaving their phones, they're leaving their laptops in cabs, and airports, all sorts of different places. We've got to make sure that we're not focusing solely on the device, but we're really focusing on the information and the person behind it.
Focusing on the information and the person behind it. Hashtag STP. Well, that's great advice. Running out of time here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, General Greg Tuhill, President, Sixth Era Federal Group. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, Managing Partner at the Oakmont Group. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Federal Tech Talk.